Welcome to the Growth Hacking Culture Podcast. I'm your host, Ivan Palomino. This podcast is about thought-provoking ideas to scale up and growth hack performing and human-centric work cultures. My guests are experts on mindsets, skills, and science behind work cultures. I hope you enjoy this episode.
I want you to imagine a team where every member is intrinsically motivated, energized, and driven to excel. They are not just working for the paycheck, but because they believe in the work, the purpose, and the impact they create. Well, sadly, the reality is that only 15% of employees worldwide feel engaged at work. This is sad. This means that the majority of employees experience disengagement, which can lead to decreased productivity, higher turnover, in a negative work environment. Today, I would like to discuss about viral leadership strategies to turn this vision into reality. Today, my guest is Jake Batzgert. Jake is the founder and CEO of Disruptive Advertising, one of the most reviewed and praised digital marketing agencies. I was checking that in Google, by the way. The reason why I have invited him is because this praise and growth of his company is due to his people. And I wanted to understand his secret behind leading a motivated team. Jake, I'm so glad that you made it today. Thank you very much for being with me today.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to it. Thanks for having me.
Jake, I want to jump into the essence of all, into the core. So this idea of intrinsic motivation. But first, let's put a little bit of context. So is it more difficult to motivate teams in an organization compared to 10 years ago? Let's imagine, like, I think your company has approximately 13, 14 years. Is it more difficult to engage and motivate your people than now?
Yeah, it is. And I would say that there's two primary reasons for that. One of those is during COVID, we went from an in-office experience to a remote-first experience. And learning how to maintain culture and motivation and those types of things in a remote setting versus in-office has been more challenging than I expected. So that's one thing that I would consider. And then the other areas are, I've just noticed people are more interested in general that their work has meaning versus just earning a paycheck. And so it's been good for me because over the years, when I first started the company, it was about making money and growing. And the company has evolved to having more meaning and purpose versus just making money. And I've noticed that we've evolved as the type of people we've attracted have evolved as well.
Jake, it's almost like they had the time to reflect during these COVID times to reflect about why are they doing what they do. And it's almost like since the 80s, because I started working end of the 90s, let's say. And since that time, we were just continuously running, trying to chase for status, paycheck. And suddenly we have got a break in time to reflect on what does it mean for us? Are we doing the things that we wanted to do when we were younger, like during university or even before university? Did we succeed to make that person? And yes, we got finally the time, a little bit of reflection, and that's why people are looking for purpose.
Yeah, and absolutely.
When we go back to this differentiation of paycheck, what we call it, extrinsic motivation, external, something that motivates us, the bonuses, our salary, compared to intrinsic motivation, something that comes from the purpose that we have, the meaning that we have in our job, what is doing to contribute for society, for the bigger thing. How can leaders today balance these both tools that they have, this extrinsic motivation, paycheck, almost like the carrot and stick? If you don't succeed, then you will not have the bonus and so on. And this area of intrinsic motivation, finding purpose? How can they balance better these leaders effectively?
Yeah. You know, I've put together a disruptive university program that actually really spends a lot of time focusing on that. And what I refer to it as is the more authentic that someone can show up in life and in their job, the more successful that they will be. And where I find balance on that for myself, and that I do my best to teach and instill in my organization and to those I have influence on, it actually comes from the Ikigai principle, which is the Japanese word, the reason for being. And so in the four things to consider is, what am I great at? What am I passionate about? What does the world need? And what can I get paid for? And the intersection of all four of those areas is where we are showing up authentically with our purpose and our reason for being. And if we overemphasize any one of those four areas, it actually takes us out of balance. And so what I've noticed is that most people are not satisfied by over-focusing on what they can make money for anymore. And so understanding, hey, how can we really lean into your strengths? How can we really allow you to lean into your values and what you see that the world needs, and allow you to make money doing that? That's where things start to feel very balanced. And what I've noticed is that people feel incredibly seen and heard when you focus on those four areas, rather than how do you make more money for the business. And if I'm being completely honest, one of the things that I've had to open my heart and open my mind to is that as I encourage people to be authentic, that might mean that working here isn't the best thing for them anymore. They might need to grow and spread their wings. That might mean that a different path is better for them. And but the alternative is worse, right? If I'm not encouraging people to learn and grow, even if that means growing out of my organization, then A, I'm not showing up authentically. And then the alternative is I have someone that's working here that's not being authentic as well. And so at first I was a little more fearful about showing up that way, and now I'm realizing it's the only way. Yeah.
Jake, you made me think about. I'm pretty sure that you have heard about Tony Hsieh, who was the founder of Zappos, and he even wrote a book about delivering happiness. And when you were talking about the match, so it can be, in fact, that either I got tired of working for you or working for your company, so it becomes not a match, and I have the right to leave if there is not any more this match. And another question that came to my mind is also this program. So you design a program and this is for your leaders. Is that correct?
For everyone.
It's for everyone. That's amazing. And that is amazing, and that is inspiring that you have decided to create something tailor-made to reflect on what you want out of your company. That is not only about putting the things about this is the number of customers that we're going to have this year, this is the revenues that we are going to have. No, it's about what behavior should be displayed in this company so that people feels also fulfilled, and they're continuously assessing if there is a match between my personal purpose and the purpose of the company. That's amazing. Jake, is it like a long program that you have designed? Is it a couple of days? Is it in parts? How did you do it? I'm interested about that.
Yeah. So it's in alpha right now because we've put all of these pieces together over the years. They have existed in some shape, way, or form. And now we've just put it into a more simple and repeatable program. And so the flagship program that I refer to as Disruptive University, it generally takes 8 to 12 weeks to go through. And so we now do that as an annual practice at the company in Q4 of each year. And then we also do challenges every month that support people experiencing breakthroughs in growth personally, professionally, or in their community. And then I actually have subject matter experts. Each quarter, they do group learning sessions that go deeper in each of those topics as well. So we've tried to keep it really cohesive and not overly time demanding, but the core program itself it you can kind of move at your own pace, but it's designed to be done in 8 to 12 weeks.
I like the fact that you are combining not only like a real class where people are acquiring knowledge, but time to practice is time to demonstrate the behaviors and also time to discuss because we learn from each other's and the challenges that we have in a discussions can inspire people to jump all the hurdles that we'll see in the path of making it happen. Talking about behaviors. So, according to you, what are these the type of leaders? What behaviors should they display in order to, in fact, encourage this, develop this intrinsic motivation within their teams? How do you get people to do things on their own because they want to? How can leaders encourage and or nurture that in their teams?
Yeah. Well, ultimately, the leader sets the tone, and the most powerful form of leadership is modeling. And so I cannot expect anyone to do something that I am not willing or doing myself. And I do think that that's where I take personal responsibility of I cannot expect my organization to embrace and adopt these principles if I am not embracing and adopting these principles myself and leading authentically and vulnerably, because none of us get all of these things perfect. These are great principles and they sound fantastic in practice, but then we still have a human experience where we have setbacks and we have relapse and we have a lot of the contrasting experiences that life provides. But the first thing is great leaders model behavior. They don't say do this and then do another thing. So that's the first thing that I would say from a leadership standpoint. But then the second one is creating an environment where it almost would feel weird not to do it. Right? So if it's just the culture of the team, if it's the culture of the organization, it's gonna like you're either gonna be weirded out and remove yourself from the organization, or it's just gonna feel natural because it's just our DNA. It's a part of our values. It's a part of how we live life and do business together. And so that's where I think willpower is like it's just short-lived energy that doesn't last that long. So that's why I'm just such a big believer in the environment. The environment needs to make it easy, and it would be like weird not to do these things if you worked here.
I like that. It is environment, but an environment is set up by how the leaders behave. And we have this weird thing in our brain that we are always, as human beings, we are always thinking about our survival mode. So whatever, if we are miming behaviors from our leaders, it's because we believe that that's what it takes to grow in the organization and survive finally in this organization. So is we learn better by miming these behaviors than going into a class training for a couple of hours discussing, and then only 5% of people will remember anything after 2 months. So these behaviors that are constantly displayed are a better, how to say, trigger of replicating the previous behaviors. And that goes to the key topic, in fact, is how to make things viral. But we will come back to that. Something that leaders have a big problem is to generate this sense of autonomy that, I mean, and it's very difficult. I mean, I feel related to that because sometimes I find that myself, I'm telling people how to do things when the main idea is that to encourage people to be autonomous. Saying, discussing about what can be achieved and letting them do things as they can, find even making mistakes because it will be a better or improved learning experience if they do mistakes. So how can we foster this sense of autonomy? Because we always believe that we have it right because we have done it in the past, right? So how can leaders let go? I love this word now. Let go and make people be autonomous, make mistakes.
Yeah. Well, there was two things that came to mind while you were asking that question. I'll share both. The first one is Do I believe that my relationship with my team member is a vertical or a horizontal relationship? Meaning, do I see myself as better or less than? And great leaders don't see themselves as better than. They see themselves as equal to, but different in their lived experiences. Okay. But it's tricky for me. If I'm being completely honest, I've often shown up as thinking I know better. Which is really saying I am better.
Yeah,
And
it is.
that is not a foundation for a healthy relationship. That's a vertical relationship of someone that's higher and someone that's lower. And I don't believe in those relationships. And that's an area that, like, I've really becoming aware and being honest with myself about that and how I've shown up as a leader and a manager. It can be painful to see that, like, I've treated a lot of people as lesser than me throughout my career. So the example that came up for me as a leader this week was with my 9-year-old daughter. And so she wakes up and she's kind of just having a pretty emotional morning. And she's stressed and panicked about her math that she's struggling with, doesn't want to go to school. And my wife, we'd both just gotten back from a trip, and she said, "Hey, can you take this one today? I don't know if I've got the emotional capacity this time." And I'm like, "Send her downstairs." I was exercising. So she comes and talks to me, and I said, "What's going on?" And she said, "Well, this, I'm just stressed out about math and I don't want to go to school today." And she's just got all these things going on. And I said, "Well, let's talk about it. First off, what do you think's best? Like, what do you think needs to happen here?" And she said, "Honestly, I'm just like really tired. I just need to take a nap." And so I said, "That's great. Go take a nap. And then let's talk when you're done." And it's still 7 a.m. when she's telling me she needs a nap. So I said, "I will come and get you before I go to work. And if that means you miss school, that's okay. Go ahead and go take a nap." So she takes a nap. Then I'm leaving. I go up 2 hours later, around 9 o'clock. She wakes up and I said, "Awesome. How are you feeling now?" She's like, "I'm feeling a lot better." And I said, "Oh, why do you think you needed a nap?" And she's like, "Because I went to bed really late last night." "Oh, what would you learn from that? Like, what would you do differently next time?" And she's like, "Oh, girl, on Sunday nights, I should probably just go to bed earlier, or else, like, I'm not going to feel great for school on Monday." And I said, "Awesome." You know what I mean? Like, she's 9 and she has her own answers. A leader trusts their people to have their own answers, but through lived experience, might be able to guide a little bit in navigating that. Guide them to trust themselves. Guide them to learn for themselves. And so that's an experience with my 9-year-old daughter. And then I look at the times I've shown up that way at work. Individuals just start to elevate themselves exponentially when you demonstrate that level of trust in them to learn and grow from their experiences rather than to solve their problems for them, so to speak. And that's what comes up for me.
I love that story, Jake. I find it hard. It's almost like being a human-centric leader, or the type of leadership that is required today, is almost you have to do much more efforts to control the beast inside of us, like the one who has an ego, the one who knows better than than the rest of the team, the one who let's go to empower the team to solve problems without intervening or micromanaging. It's always like you have to be in control to notice these little signs, these little triggers that make us behave in the old leadership way. The one maybe where I grew up, or maybe the one where you, Jake, grew up in the past. And it's difficult to get rid of that part of us, right?
It really is.
The question that I wanted to understand also from you is that I'm pretty sure that there has been moments, I don't know, COVID or moments where, I mean, we get anxious in a team because results are not good, people, or because of a big change, people are demotivated. Like imagine working remotely during COVID, people gets demotivated. But and sometimes because of the focus on business outcomes, we don't pay attention to the little signs that shows that our team is demotivated. So how can we make it so that we leaders can be always ready to spot the signs of demotivation in the team, and they can, and how can we do it also to transform a demotivated team into a better situation? Let's call it that, like that.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I'm a big believer in that learning occurs through awareness. You can't, if you're not aware, you can't do anything about anything. Honesty. I think most of us judge ourselves based on our intentions, but we judge others based on their actions, and we struggle to be honest with ourselves. And then last one is responsibility, right? Like if I'm aware and I'm honest and I take responsibility, then life moves forward in really beautiful ways. And when I see a demotivated team, I simply know I have a demotivated leader. Period. Period. If I have a demotivated team, I have a demotivated leader. And if I have a demotivated leader, what's that saying about me? That I'm demotivated. Because you see, our teams are a mirror to how we're doing on the inside. My leaders are a mirror of how I'm leading the company as the owner and CEO of the company. It's all a mirror. And so that's why trying to solve the team's motivation never works. I need to solve my own motivation. And when I'm showing up motivated, I will model and draw that naturally out of the team. And so often that awareness, that honesty, and that responsibility, life is a mirror and it simply reflects what's going on inside of us. And so that's what, when you ask that question, like, oh, when I've got a demotivated team, my first response is to blame the leader. And then, but I'm doing the same thing. It's actually a reflection of me, and I'm just abdicating responsibility. I'm not being honest. I'm not being responsible. And so I'm practicing because I'm not perfect at this. Okay, I've got a struggling department. That means I've got a struggling leader. That means that's an area of the business I'm struggling in. How can I show up differently? And then when I'm showing up differently, it will resolve itself. Because then either you do or don't have the right leader, you do or don't have the right team, and those things start to resolve themselves. But it always, the leader will always set the tone, and the team is just a mirror. That's all the team is, in my perspective.
Indeed. Is there like sort of routines of habits that you have that you apply in your day-to-day? Let me explain you better. So I'm a big believer of habit formation, like a couple of things that I have to do in order to have my life into control. For certain things it works, maybe for certain it's a little bit more difficult. Do you have your own routines to make so that you can pay attention? Or in the people. Maybe you have routines about checking numbers and stuff like that. I'm not interested in that part. I'm interested about from the people side, do you have any routines about that you to take care of yourself so that you have this bandwidth to deal with people?
Yeah. Well, I will tell you that I am a big believer in the power of habits and that it's hard to rise above the level of our habits. And so I am not perfect, but I am pretty religious about how I follow my habits on a daily basis. And I do have a morning routine and I have an evening routine. Both of which address the mind, body, and the spirit to create centering exercises and to get myself right. And that includes things like journaling, reflecting, meditation, exercise, listening to a good book, stretching, a lot of things that really get my mind, body, and soul aligned. Because I believe that those are the three things that make up who we are as a mind, body, and spirit. And that spirit is that inner compass that always knows the direction we're supposed to be going. But when we forget and start living primarily through our body or primarily through our body and our mind can get preoccupied with survival. And when they're preoccupied with survival, I'm no longer living in alignment with my higher purpose and what I know I'm here to do. And so my practices are about reminding myself that I am not my body, I am not my mind, but that those are beautiful experiences that I get to have during this lifetime. And so I do take that very seriously in the mornings, in the evenings. And as someone that I always struggled with meditation because silence was scary for me because I had no control over my thoughts. My thoughts controlled me. And then I realized that's just a thought too. And so incorporating meditation, and for me, it's just 10 to 15 minutes in the morning and 10 to 15 minutes in the evening of just being quiet and just allowing myself to be aware of my thoughts and then redirect my attention back to my breath. And then I wander off of my thoughts again, and then I remember they're just my thoughts and I come back. That's it. And those are the habits that for me help me show up more centered, as a leader and in my organization.
A lot of people think that the habit creation is something that it is related more to be focused more in a specific area like our work or our personal life. And in fact, I have seen better results when we mix both together. So, for instance, if you're talking about either mindfulness or meditation, that it is about ourselves and we are the same person in at work or at home. It is good for both areas. If we are journaling, for instance, it's about our experience during the day. So part was with our families, part was at work. So it is joined together, and it's something that is quite useful in order to improve. Like you mentioned, a lot of people, including me, have challenges with meditation. But I mean, it's the practice that help us become better, and the practice can start as of 2 minutes. I still remember that I started with the 2 minutes breathing exercise, and by consistency, then it doesn't become so much painful, and then we get rid of this belief that, oh, I cannot have control of my thoughts. That's exactly as you mentioned, Jake. That was impressive. Is there any I want to benefit more and more of whatever experience you have. Do you have any specific tips, like for leaders who are working remotely with their team, in order to keep their teams motivated? Because the situation is that it's a little bit a different setup to have a team that is always meeting, seeing your face, like live in an office compared to being remotely located. I'm not sure if your company has many of the people working remotely, but how do you do in order to keep them motivated despite the fact that they might be miles away?
Yeah. Well, at this point, we have about 130 employees, and only about 10 to 15 come into the office on a regular basis.
Oh.
And so I've got a beautiful office that's pretty empty. I come in most days because I've got 4 kids, 2 cats, and a lot of Amazon deliveries that are very distracting. So Monday through Thursday, I still come in for my own mental health. The first way that I would answer that question is to just trust yourself. If you step back and say, do I have the culture of trust and camaraderie on this team that I would like? You will know what the answer to that question is. And then if I'm honest with myself, how am I contributing to the level of trust and camaraderie that we have on this team? And performance. Let's throw performance in there as well. If I'm honest, how am I contributing to that? And then the third question is, and now that I'm aware of what's going on with the team, now that I'm being honest with how I'm contributing to that, the question is, what's one action I could take today or this week that would increase and improve those areas? And you will always know the answer to that question if you just create a little bit of space to be aware, to be honest, and to take responsibility. You are your own best teacher. You are your own guru. It's just creating a little bit of space to do that for yourself. And because the answer to that question will be different for every team and every leader. And that's why I don't pretend to have the answers for anyone anymore. I just believe that you have your own answers. And that's the process, the framework or the structure that I've found that helps me find my own answers rather than being a victim to everything that's going on. Because, you know, it is pretty straightforward. There usually is one thing we can do a little differently that increases that. It has been a challenge more than I realized we bring people in a couple times a year. We still have things that we do things together, but the piece that is missing that I have yet to figure out in a way that is consistent and effective is impromptu conversations without an agenda. Because when we're remote, most meetings have a purpose. And one of the things I like as a more extroverted person is having interactions with people that don't have an agenda and just are connecting experiences. And I haven't quite figured out how to do that yet in a more remote first culture.
I think only these continuous iterations can help us develop this specific skill. I can tell you, I have many, including myself, who have this challenge of being a little bit in the same way that if you and me, we were meeting, I'm pretty sure that we will have a beer in front of us and it would be different. But there is this distance, this camera that prevent us to be so natural as per our human behavior. And it is still a challenge for many of us. Jake, but in the practicalities of dealing or leading remotely, what is one of your practice? Do you do it in a daily basis to have a meeting with most of them, or is it in a weekly basis? How do you do that? How do you, in order to maintain this connection?
Yeah, what we do today, and like you said, it's always evolving, but we as a company, it kind of tears down. But everyone has a weekly team meeting. We use the Entrepreneurial Operating System, EOS, from the book Traction. That is the methodology that we use. So once a week, we have what we call our L10 team meeting, where we discuss all the things that need to be discussed around what's going on well in your life. Are there any headlines for the team members that we need to be aware of? What are the challenges that you're facing? Let's get those on a list. Let's work through those together as a team. So we have that team meeting once a week, and everyone is a part of a team, so everyone has that. The standard practice is most managers are meeting one-on-one with their team members for at least 30 minutes to an hour a week just to support and make sure that they're getting the connection and support that they need to be successful in their roles. Depending on the size of the team, that might be every other week. Often that's once a week. And I do that a little bit differently because in my organization, I act as the visionary for the vision, the alignment. I have someone that's over operations and someone that's over finances. And so the three of us meet regularly with our department heads to move that forward. So I'm meeting not as frequently as weekly, but they're getting a touch point every week, whether that's from me, my operational leader, or my finance leader. Each week, they're getting some one-on-one time to get the support they need in those three areas.
That's quite insightful. Listen, I was in preparation of this this episode. I watched some of the episodes that you have done, and I know some of these podcasts regarding specializing in digital marketing and in SEO. And I mean, some of the interviewers knew the reputation of your company quite well. So they were praising disruptive advertising quite a lot. I mean, because the community of digital marketeers is not that huge. So, but they were really praising your work. And I was wondering, so is there anything that we can learn from your marketing expertise in order to create this virality to nudge motivation across an organization? Is there any tricks, any growth hacking tool that can help us really expand this motivation across an organization?
Yeah. Well, there's two things that come up for me is the first one is to understand what matters most and why. And I'm just surprised at how much I have struggled with that and how most businesses struggle with that. And so most of the time I'm just like, well, what matters most? Well, we want to hit a revenue target for the year. Cool. Why? Most people don't have a good answer, right? We want to hit our profit target. Okay, cool. Why? Well, we will eventually want to sell the business. Well, why do you eventually want to sell the business? It's like until you get really clear on what matters most and why that matters, it is so challenging to get alignment in the company and to move things forward effectively. And so if I were to say a business hack, I've found as someone that has a lot of ideas and that can chase a lot of shiny objects, I've gotten significant value in leaning into the entrepreneurial operating system and getting very clear on my brand purpose and my personal purpose. And when I stay true to those, we just shine and thrive as a company. And when I don't live true to that, we struggle as a company. And so getting really clear on your personal why and on your business why, I think is what really sets apart phenomenal organizations versus average to mediocre organizations. So that's the first place that I would start. And then that which you measure improves. And so how do you actually measure how well we're delivering on that promise? And most businesses struggle to actually be able to report on how effective they're being in those areas as well. And so that's how I would address that. A little bit more specifically, we have five brand pillars that we're not living authentic to our promise as a company if those five pillars aren't being delivered. That's what we focus on measuring. They all contribute to the higher purpose of the business. Everyone knows, everyone, I have my VP, I have a VP that's responsible for each of those pillars. Like it just creates my clarity is the team's confidence. The clarity of the vision is the confidence of the company. And so those are the things that I focus on that do move the needle the most.
Thank you very much, Jake, for sharing your expertise, sharing your experience in your company. Remind me, it is around 12 years since you founded the agency Disruptive Advertising. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So, and the job of this disruptive advertising is to support organization with latest tools on digital marketing. Is that correct?
Yeah, we're a performance digital marketing agency. And so most businesses lack the bandwidth or the expertise to grow their business to the next level, leaning into all their digital marketing channels. And so we bring an account director with all of the resources to execute against that. Yeah.
Yeah, God knows that I would have needed that type of support like when I launched my own business. Jake, how can people reach you out? I mean, it can go from the support with your agency, or it can be maybe to ask you questions about some to have some wisdom or inspiration. How can they reach you out, Jake?
Yeah. The three best ways to reach out. Personally, I'm most active on LinkedIn, so feel free to connect and chat with me there. It's easy to find me at Jake Batsgard. There's a lot of A's in my name. For the agency, it's disruptiveadvertising.com. And I have a phenomenal team that will add value. We don't work with most businesses. We know when we're a great fit, and we don't work with anyone that we're not a great fit for. But we always add value and provide insights about how you can move your marketing and business forward. And then disruptiveuniversity.com is where you can access. It's currently an alpha, but it's being released in beta this year and will be more available. But the program and a lot of the things I talk about is going to be available on disruptiveuniversity.com as well.
So disruptiveuniversity.com is already live, if I understood.
Yeah, it's in alpha, so it's not available to sign up for the general public. But yes.
Okay, that's great. Listen, I'm going to put these three links below this episode. Thank you very much because I think I have learned quite a lot about from your experience and this idea of bringing leadership tips to build intrinsic motivation across across team. Jake, that was really nice to meet you. And I don't know if you want to say some last words, some last tip for leaders, just go ahead.
Yeah, I would just reiterate, trust yourself. You always know the next best step to take in wherever you're struggling. And so that's all I would say. Just believe and trust in yourself.
Thank you, Jake. Thank you very much for this episode. Have a great day.